Welcome to the Due Diligence Podcast, where we explore how leaders make and execute their biggest decisions, from transactions to founding organizations to career pivots and beyond. This podcast is produced by Sleeping Giant Capital. We connect executive talent and capital to invest in West Michigan businesses. To learn more, visit us at sleepinggiantcapital.com or stop by our office in downtown Kalamazoo.
Kelly and Rob, welcome to the Due Diligence Podcast. Thank you for joining us today, this morning. It's great to have you both. This is a unique one because this is the first time we've had a seller and a buyer on at the same time. I think this is a rare occasion. Very rarely does anybody get a seller and buyer to join us at the same time. So thank you both. I'm going to give some quick introductions here. Kelly was a CEO in residence at Sleeping Giant Capital. She's got a very deep background in HR, CHRO roles at very big companies, worked in public companies, and she took the journey to acquire a small business. And Rob, I should know this, but you and your partner started Pondera. How many years ago was it?
2006. So 19 years ago.
19 years ago, you started Pondera, which is the eminent leadership consulting firm in West Michigan. You're beyond that now, but you're located in Grand Rapids, and you and your partner have run that, and you are probably one of the best leadership coaches out there. And you guys are on a journey of building Pondera. So let's talk about the entire journey and how this started. And we'll get to know each other a little bit too as we go through this. But really, I want to talk to both of you about what it was like going through as a buyer and seller, what you experienced, and then the relationship and the that you've built with each other. And there is one unique part to this that we'll get to later in the podcast, so I'm going to tease it out. But you had a partner too, Joe. So there was Kelly buying from Pondera from a partner group. So two people. So that has some unique dynamics, but I'd just love to get your experience of going through that partnership and then Kelly's as well. So let's start with and anything you guys want to give a shout out about Pondera right now before we start. You know, there's a great assessment tool. We use the assessment tool to assess our CEOs now. Any other plugs you guys want to give Pondera, Rob or Kelly, before we get into it?
I mean, I think the whole podcast is going to be a plug. So let's get into the questions for me, because I think the number one reason why I bought Pondera is probably going to be the biggest plug. So I would rather give it space there. But if anybody needs any leadership consulting or is looking for an assessment tool, we have the best.
Okay. Rob, anyone add to that at all?
No, I agree with Kelly. Let's just roll.
Okay. Let's start with you, Rob. The seller's perspective. This is always good because in the community of buying small businesses, there's a lot of stuff out there hearing from the buyers. But what you bring a very unique perspective on the seller. So, first, like what kind of motivated you to sell Pondera? What was the reason you and your partner kind of went down this, and you know, the drive behind it being the time to sell?
I want to emphasize what you said a minute ago is that, you know, Pondera was a partnership between Joe Day and Rob Elliott that started 19 years ago. And what I'm going to offer to you today is Rob Elliott's perspective. You know, Joe had a very different perspective on the entire situation, but I'm just going to share mine. Joe and I, from very early in the conception of the firm, talked about the fact that we likely would exit together at some point in the future because of the fact that Joe was 14 years younger than I am. And so he indicated that he was not interested in, you know, being able to run the practice by himself. And it was unlikely that he would be interested in taking another partner on to work with him after I was done. And so we indicated that most likely the best way for us to exit the business would be to exit together. So that was something that we conceptually talked about a long time ago. Given the fact that at the time that this whole thing went down, I was 70 and Joe was 56, you know, we were not in the position yet to exit. We were not looking to leave. You know, we had not had any conversations with anybody about the potential of, you know, selling our business. Kelly approached us in July of last year, and I was very impressed with her in the first impression. And I remember saying to her, you know, very candidly, Kelly, I really like you. I like your vision. I'm interested in what you have to offer. However, you've got to also be able to sell that to my business partner, Joe. And I'm skeptical about, you know, Joe saying yes to that. But here I'm going to tee it up and let you and Joe talk. And then much to my surprise, Joe came back to me after that conversation with Kelly. And he said, no, I think this could be good for us. I think she might be the person. So we were not looking at the time to exit. But when Kelly appeared, we thought it would be a good opportunity for us collectively.
Okay. And so how important in that, because you said when Kelly appeared, right? How important was, and I'll give Kelly some props, was finding the right person in the sales process, right? You mentioned Kelly was the person, but how important was it that what you guys started, you know, 19 years ago in 2006, that you found the right person to take it over? How important did that come into the equation?
For me personally, it was critical. I'm an altruist. I'm interested in Pondera continuing beyond what Joe and I started. I was interested in someone who was interested in continuing to embrace our team and involve the team of people that we had built. And I was interested in someone who really could see the value in the tool that we created and that would be interested in not only continuing it, but being able to figure out how to expand its reach. And I felt that, you know, Kelly was going to check all those boxes for us.
Okay. Well, think back. So when you were selling and you and Joe were having those conversations, what was your biggest fear in the selling process? Or the idea of selling, either.
Derek, I embraced the process from day one. For me, over the course of the time that I've been involved with Pondera, the thing that I've always focused on is I really enjoy the business development process. I enjoy, interacting with prospective clients and, you know, seeing if there's a fit in terms of their organization and ours. And I really enjoy delivering service. And those are the two things that I've always enjoyed doing. I deferred to Joe and to our practice manager, Greg, to really, you know, run the business. I didn't have a need to be in control. I really liked doing the work. And I saw a path forward with Kelly for me to be able to continue to do the work. As I shared, I'm 70 years old, and many people would say, you know, 70, let's get this guy out of here. I'm glad that, you know, Kelly embraced me and is willing to still involve me in the business. So I didn't have any fears going into this at all. I saw an exciting path forward in terms of me continuing to be able to do what I want to do.
So then that you did embrace the process a lot, as I remember, it was exciting to work with you, actually. Can you talk about some of the things that you had to do to prepare Pondera, yourself, your partner, your team for the sales that other people may think, hey, you have to do this to prepare Pondera to be sold when you're going through the sale process?
Well, one thing, and I still don't have an answer to it. I wish that we had prepared our team a little bit differently for the change, because it's been a positive change, but it's been going through the transition was a big change for our people. There was a lot of fear on their part in terms of what the future was going to be for them. However, as you both know, it's pretty difficult, you know, because this is still when we started talking, it was a concept. It was an idea, you know, there was no deal. And so we had to be pretty secretive about the whole thing. So I would say a couple of things we did to get ready. One is we started talking to our advisors. You know, we started talking to our accountant about what we were contemplating. We started talking to our valuation person, who was also a client of ours. We started talking to our attorney, who also was a client of ours. And so we started talking to people that we thought would help us, you know, navigate the transaction. And then the other thing Joe and I did is, as quickly as we could, we tried to contact some other people who we were familiar with had recently sold their businesses and just ask them to give us some insight in terms of what they had gone through. That was really how we prepared, is getting aligned with our business advisors and then trying to learn from other people who had been through the experience before.
Yeah, interesting. That could be a burgeoning practice for Pondera now with your experience. How to prepare your team post during the M&A process and post transaction. You guys can come in and really change some things. Were there anything emotional or personal that you didn't expect, Rob, or any hurdles that you thought, you know, this was different, or this I did not expect this during the sale process?
I really thought it would be a more of an emotional thing for me, and it wasn't. It very much was for Joe. It was a very difficult experience for Joe. It was not for me at all. You know, Joe and I had a great run together. I loved working with Joe. We had 19 marvelous years, and we had very complementary styles. And at the same time, I'm really embracing this change with Kelly. I adore this woman. I think she's an exemplary leader. I think she's going to do great work with our clients when she chooses to do some consulting work. But I'm just really embracing the partnership that I have with her. I'm grateful that she consults with me. She's the decision maker, but she does involve me in decision making in terms of asking for my opinions about things. I'm just really enjoying this tremendously. It's a lot of fun. It really is. I feel blessed at this point in my life to be having as much fun as I am.
Okay. If you go back to the sales process, anything that you would do differently? Anything that you would change besides the team, besides for getting training?
But from the seller's perspective, you know, the thing that Joe and I realized is obviously, you know, the valuation of our business, you know, was based on, you know, what we were worth today, not what we were going to be worth in the future. And yet, you know, one of the things that, you know, we had candid conversations with the two of you about is the fact that we thought we were really, you know, selling you some intellectual property that had a lot of potential for the future. The one thing that I would have done differently had I known that, you know, that we were on that verge of selling is that we should have been much more disciplined about generating more revenue with just the instrument itself, you know, so that we could have, you know, negotiated for a higher price from that standpoint. I feel like we got a very fair price based on what we had done with the business up to that point. But if I had it to do over again, we should have been more diligent about being able to grow the value of the virtual advisor prior to the transaction. That's the one thing that I would have done differently.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The virtual advisor is such a good tool. And I think that most sellers, at least when we talk to them, they're like, this will be worth X in the future. You have to pay me for that. I mean, I can pay for what you've done to this point
exactly.
Today.
I agree.
And what the business is today. And that's the price and evaluation. I think a lot of people get mixed up in those two things. And it's a really good lesson. And I think it's fair. And as a seller, you know, if you want that valuation, then you've got to put that work into all that.
Oh, absolutely.
And get the outcome, and then we'll pay for you when the outcome's there. So
right.
That's a really good point, Rob. I'm glad you made that for any sellers. It's probably the biggest point that we disagree with in most negotiations. But yeah. Let's transition you, Kelly, and then we'll try and get some conversation going back and forth. Kelly, why Pondera? Like, why, you know, besides for Rob and Joe and the great team and the great tool they've built, you know, why Pondera and what you're trying to do and your broader vision?
Yeah, so I started this journey, as you both know, back in 24. And as a part of what I'm creating, so I'm creating this human capital advisory platform. And I knew there was no full platform to go by. So the idea was I was going to go by two or three organizations, put them together to create this really great and robust advisory firm. And there was a few verticals I was going after. I always knew I wanted an executive coaching firm. Like that was a never debate. I knew that was one of the practice areas I wanted. So when I came across Pondera, there was two things that really stood out. I call it the who and the what. So the who, and when I started this journey, I very specifically told you, Derek, that I want to choose who I spend the last 10, 15 years of my career with. I've met with other executive firms, coaching firms in this process, and I did not want to do business with the leader. And in this case, I actually really like Rob and Joe. Very different, but I was like, you know what? I can work with both these guys. They understood I'm very direct. You don't ever need a decoder ring with me. And I actually appreciated that. So that was the first thing, was the who. Then it comes to the what. Finding an executive coaching firm is actually not that hard. What is hard is finding a validated, amazing assessment tool. So I am certified, I don't know, in like 10 or 15 of these tools. I mean, you name it, Myers-Briggs, DISC, the Hogan, whatever. And when I took the PVA, I mean, I think I walked into your office, Derek, and I said, there's something different here. This is not me just trying to tell you I've got a great firm. There's something amazing in this tool that's different that I haven't seen in the other tools. And if you think about a human capital advisory platform, hiring, developing people, exiting people, the one thing that you could use in all of that is a really great assessment tool. So to me, it was kind of like the crown jewel of having something that I could pull, I could thread through kind of the entire firm. So really it's the who and the what. I'll start with the who. Rob and Joe are amazing. And the what is there's this really great assessment tool that I think we can scale and make a meaningful difference. I mean, those are the two reasons.
Mm-hmm. And so in that, we let's talk about Rob and Joe a little bit. How did you approach, you know, what did you learn from approaching the and going through the deal with Rob, from building trust to dealing with buying from partners, et cetera, et cetera? What are some key things that you picked up on the journey?
Yeah, so openly, so the first deal that I did was RepLite, and that was just one owner, right? So you guys can, if you're listening to this podcast, you should go listen to the podcast with just Rick. He's a character. It's just Derek and Rick. I will say the most challenging part of this deal was having Rob and Joe. And it's not that they both were great to work with. It's just they really were two different life stages. They really had two different goals. They ultimately wanted to get to the promised land. Like they knew where they wanted to get. But the how, I'm not going to lie, it was challenging. I'd be on the phone with Rob one day, then Joe the next day. And I'd be like, okay, well, they were really good at communicating. So that was good. But I mean, the more cooks you have in the kitchen, the harder it is to get to a meal that everybody wants. So it was a labor of love. This was not a quick, I met them one day and then the next day we closed. I mean, I met them in July of 24 and we closed the end of May of 25. And that was not just me coming in and out. Like it was a relationship we developed.
So the relationship part of that and building trust, you know, everyone thinks they can just send emails and buy companies. I think that's false in our, at least in West Michigan from our experience. But like, what are some key things that you did in that you learned that, you know, a year almost from when you met them to when you closed that transaction to build trust, to do things, you know, you said you're on the phone with both of them all the time. What are some things that you learned that were key to getting, you know, a great company like Pondera, to sell and Rob and Joe to trust you?
So let me first tell you where I screwed up. Like if I'm just being very vulnerable here.
Yeah, even better. Even better. That's the better.
Yeah, tell us like what you're, tell us what places where I went. One of the places where I was like, oh, that was not great. And Rob, thank you for your patience. But I realized, I don't know, it was a few months in, Rob, where they were not selling me a business. They were selling me that the PVA was like their baby. Like the coaching business was actually not the thing they held near and dear to their heart. The Pondera Virtual Advisor, which had gone through multiple iterations and a labor of love. And I didn't quite realize how important that was to the transaction. If you remember, Derek, that's when we had you take it and Doug take it. And we actually pumped the brakes on the deal because we said, hey, you know what? Let's talk about valuation. Let's not talk about cash at close or equity or any of that. Let us experience the tool more so they know that we really see what it is they're selling us. And I kind of screwed that up, like openly. Like I was looking at it like, okay, you know, these are the, this is the adjusted EBITDA. This is the deal. I want to keep working with them. I just don't think I realized what was so important to them. So that was one. And then two, and we could talk about this till I'm blue in the face. The sooner you could bypass your advisors, like, I'm sorry, but the attorneys, the accountants, they're great. They're there for a reason. You need them. But when shit hits the fan, you call the person and you have an open and sometimes very difficult dialogue. And I don't think actually me, Rob, or Joe ever hedged from that. Like there were definitely some very tense, but real conversations.
Yeah. The having conversations with the owner. And so let's break in there and let's dive in deep. Cause I think Rob, if I remember correctly, we were sitting in the room at Sleeping Giant Capital here. I think you and Joe are both here. And I think Rob, you're the one that suggested we're not moving forward till everyone takes the tool. You guys need to experience, you need to use it. You need to believe in what you're getting. So Rob, take us to that moment. Let's go to that moment. We're in a meeting. We're talking about the valuation of the company and everything paused. And it's like, you guys need to try our tool. And our whole team went through it and we actually got Sleeping Giant. You came down for a coaching session and coached us on how we're different, what we need, what would be good to add to the team. Talk about that moment and why that was, because Kelly, I totally forgot about that until you reminded me. Talk about that moment, Rob, like what it meant to you and what, and how it was important to the deal.
Well, I mean, I remember vividly, you know, Joe talking about a number that he thought the business was worth. And, you know, both of you rolled your eyes up into your head and thought, you know, this guy is out of his mind. And it occurred to me in that moment that, wait a second, you know, how can they really understand the value of what we're talking about if they've never personally experienced it? I mean, you know, that we really need to provide you an opportunity to be able to see what we're talking about. And so that's why, you know, I felt like you thought Joe was being unrealistic, and I thought a way to try to bring some realism to that discussion was for you to have a chance to experience how we do what we do.
Yeah. And so the experience is the right word. Cause I know Doug and I got one-on-one coaching. Kelly, I think you did. I had a session with you,
and I
Rob.
Did with Kamala, and I, yeah, Kamala, we did it with everybody. And then I came down and did a team session with all of you as well. You know, yeah. And just talk to you about how we deployed what we do and what the potential was.
So this was due diligence at a next level almost, which was really interesting. We actually went to, hey, we're all going to experience working with this company as a customer. And we are a customer now. Yeah. You know, one of the things we were looking for was, hey, how do we assess the CEOs that we're selecting better into our program? And how do we give them better training through our training program? And so we've actually put the tool into our training program. So whether you work with us or not, you get the training, the virtual advisor. And then if you become a resident, you get more training, which we haven't gotten to that stage yet with anybody because of the acquisition so new. But
Derek, to that point, the thing that we realized several years ago, and it's something we continue to do today under Kelly's leadership, is that in the business development process, as quickly as we can, we get people to demo the PBA. Because once people get a chance to experience it, like Kelly talked about, it's just different than anything else that people have experienced. If we can get people to try it, they very quickly, you know, are drawn in and are interested in being able to really have a meaning. You know, otherwise, you're just talking about concepts and things like that. But when you can actually get people to go through the experience, they get a chance to see that it's different. So not only was it important, you know, in us being able to get a deal that worked for you guys and worked for us, but we also find that it's essential to the work that we do in terms of getting to meet a prospective client and talking about the potential of doing business together.
Yeah. How important is that? We always tell CEOs, pretend you're the customer. What's the sales process? How does this look? And diligence. And you guys were, proud's not the right word, but had so much belief in your tool that you let the buyer, like, hey, you guys need to go through this. You need to check it. You need to validate it. You need to experience it. You need to understand what we do. And it was such a different process than we've been through before. When you're like, we're building machines. Here's the machine. You can't really sit on the machine and try it. Right. So it was such an interesting point. And I think I don't know about for you, Rob, but it felt like we got to know your company at such a deeper level. And you probably, I'm assuming, got to know us way, way better as a team. That was one of our fears, actually, right, Kelly? We're like, okay, well, hold on one second. They have our personality assessment. What does this do to negotiations?
Hang on. That was your fear. That was not my fear. You're like, hey, he's going to get to know me. I'm like, yeah, he's going to get to know you.
Well, it's a funny part because I remember this conversation, Kelly. I'm like, I'm totally fine with getting coaching. I'd love some more coaching. I'm a massive, like, learn more about myself, learn more about a team. But at the same time, we were in the middle of negotiations and I was like, okay, these guys are personality experts. And now they're going to have all of our personalities in a negotiating room. Does that help or hurt? Like weighing the trust factor versus the you know, letting your guard down factor in a negotiation was a really interesting dynamic of this deal for sure. I don't know. Rob, tell us about that. Did you think of like that way or were you totally, they need to see the value of our tool. We have to help them.
Yeah, my focus was on you need to see the value of the tool. And you know, my sense was that you and Doug had a personality style that was very similar to Joe's. And so I indicated to Joe, I'm the one that needs to give Derek and Doug feedback on the results because I'm quite different from the two of them. And it'll be a more effective, you know, and that's no different than how Joe and I ran the business for years. I mean, Joe and I would very quickly assess which one of the two of us or one of our other consultants would be a better fit for someone. And we felt under the circumstances, it would be best if I engaged with you and your team as opposed to Joe, simply because Joe was too similar to you and Doug, you know?
Yeah. What a unique, and I did have a conversation with Joe during it, but it was on someone else. So he was giving me feedback on someone else. So that was probably worked better, but what a unique process too, that you guys have where it's, hey, let's look at their assessment and figure out who would be the best coach based on their assessment, not just I will coach them because I'm a leadership coach and I can coach anybody, right? Such a an interesting approach that you guys have. Were there any moments – so let's keep this going. Now we get the dialogue with both you guys going. We don't have to just interview one of you guys. Any moments that either you, Kelly, or you, Rob, or both of you felt this deal is falling apart, it's not going to go through, it's – think through the selling journey.
So there was one for me, only one. I mean, there's multiple bumps. Like that's just normal in the, but there was one because Rob had kind of been the glue. Like, it's true, Rob. Like you, I remember having a conversation with you, and we were negotiating what was the best way to structure the deal. Anyways, to make you and Joe both in a good place. But there was one I'll never forget because I was sitting in a Starbucks. It was the Friday we were supposed to close the deal. And Rob was hot. Like he was not happy. He was pissed. And up until then, Rob had never been the one that was pissed. Anyways, he calls me and I just let you talk and quickly realized, and this is why I was like, everybody, make sure you know what your attorneys are doing. My attorney had put language in the employment agreement that I disagreed with. Like I actually fundamentally disagreed with. And it got to Rob and he had actually had every right to be pissed, to be honest. And I understood they wanted everything to be the same and similar, but look, Joe and Rob are different ages, 70 and 56. And so I knew we were going to have to do things a little bit uniquely based upon where they're at in their journey. Anyways, so Rob was hot. I was like, ooh, I didn't know like if I was going to be able to get him off of the ceiling. I did. Actually, you did it yourself. I just said, look, Rob, I hear you. Let me see what I can do. Let me read the language. We had it fixed by that night at midnight. So we had it fixed and got him. But there was a moment there where I was like, oh, this is going south very quickly. Remember Rob, that call, Rob?
Rob, what about you?
Well, I do remember that phone call. And yet, having said that, I thought from the very beginning that we were going to get a deal done because I just felt like it was the right thing. And I knew it was going to be a process that we were going to have to go through. But I thought at the end of the day, we were going to get a deal done. And, you know, I'm the eternal optimist. Joe has much more of a critical eye to the world. There were multiple times that Joe would come in and say to me, "And it's not going to happen." And I would say, "Well, respectfully, Joe, I disagree. I think it is going to happen. We just need to be patient. We need to let this go." And there were multiple times where he'd come in and vent to me about something, and I'd say, "You got to call Kelly. You just freaking call Kelly and talk about it, you know? We I think we just kept doing that. We kept talking through things and working through things. And, you know, we got to a better place. But you got to trust the process. The thing that I believe that cripples most relationships, both personal and professional, is unmet, uncommunicated expectations. That I have an expectation of another person, I'm freaking disappointed that they're not showing up that way, and yet I've never said to the other person, this is what I want, this is what I need. You know, that happens all the time. And I think as it relates to this transaction, I think overall, over time, we did a pretty good job of letting each other know what we needed, and then we negotiated. And that's what negotiation is. I mean, we talk about where we're at and what we need. And then fortunately, we were dealing with a bunch of creative people here that, you know, the three of us involved in this conversation, as well as my partner, Joe, and we figured out a way to make this thing work for everybody.
Well, so there's two. Okay, let's talk about two things here, because this is probably unique, not unique, but when there's partners involved in the deal, that's one part I want to talk about and go back to that, Kelly. But the other thing is, but picking up the phone and calling the person, like, if I can help coach any of our CEOs in residence or anybody trying to buy a company, just pick up the phone and call that owner and figure out what they actually want and what the disagreement is and what they need. Don't lose that touch. I think one of our very first deals we did, Sleeping Giant Capital, went south at the 11th hour. And we went, the one hot wash we did was, how often did you meet with the owner or have them communicating with them? And it was like, well, we let the lawyers and them and this handle it. And the lawyers do a great job. Our lawyers are great and they do their role. But we actually instituted, you should have a weekly coffee call with the owner, minimum. It's a 90-day process. You should be meeting with them weekly just to get their feelings. Is everything okay? Getting to communicate. You can't over communicate with an owner or seller or buyer when you're transacting a company, right? I know the lawyers will try and keep everything separate and everybody, but I think that's a bad thing. The other part which made it probably go smooth is you're such a good leadership coach, right? Like, right, you coach people on this, Rob. So you know that a lot of times communication breaks this down. So, you know, how often did you guys talk when you were going through, both you and your partner, Rob, you and Kelly, Rob, and then Joe and, or Kelly and Joe? How often would you think you guys communicated for the, you know, the 90 days when we were doing diligence, or 60 days, however long it took?
Yeah, I don't. That's a great question. So what was weird about this deal is that you have to understand Rob and Joe are billable, meaning so part of the revenue is them meeting with clients. So I had to balance. I had to thread the needle, if you will. And by the way, I'm also an extreme extrovert, right? So I'll meet with everybody all the time, right? But so I had to balance the fact that I want to meet with them, but I also know they're billable. I would say at least weekly. Sometimes with Joe, I would argue it was probably two or three times a week. And they're about an hour away. So I also made sure I gave FaceTime at least once every other week. But I was always on the phone with them. Like I said, at least weekly. It was rare the three of us to be together. And I think that's the nature of having multiple partners. Now, what I will say, at least in this case, and I had another deal that didn't end up closing that wasn't the case, is I knew that Rob and Joe were talking. So if I had not had that level of confidence that they were talking, and it was just based on the conversation, Rob's like, well, I'll talk to Joe, or hey, you know what, Joe, you need to call Kelly, Joe. So the fact that I knew there was triangulation, I guess, happening, I was fine. There was another deal that I worked on, Derek, you know that deal, and those partners weren't talking. It was like I was literally talking to two human beings that wanted to get a divorce. That was really difficult. So I would say weekly, at least.
And so Rob, how often did you, you know, is that accurate, I guess, with Kelly, but how often were you and Joe talking? Was it daily? Was it every morning, every night? What was your cadence when you guys were going through the deal process? Because partner selling is a whole different, everyone just says it's a company you're buying the business. And we say, once there's two, it's a lot. When you get three or four, we usually walk away. Like, there's no way we're getting through this. But partner selling, how often did you and Joe talk through the process, you think?
It wasn't daily, but it was multiple times a week. As Kelly indicated, you know, our business model was predicated on me being as much as possible, 100% billable. So I'm in front of clients all the time, and then Joe was billable, but Joe also was our R&D guy, more of our inside, development guy. So he had more flexibility. So Joe met with Kelly a lot more than I did because, I was optimistic that this was going to go, but until you got a deal, until it's done, it's not done. And so we had to keep running our business. And those 90 days were stressful from the standpoint that, you're trying to run a business and you also are trying to sell a business simultaneously. And they're just, for those 90 days, there were not enough freaking hours in the day. I mean, we were going hard for 90 days, and it was a big relief when we were finally done. Because it was an intense process. And I think many people who sell their companies are owners who are not involved often in the day-to-day. They're not essential to the business. I'm essential to this business. I had to keep working. So it was a crazy time.
Yeah, the revenue, Rob, you're such a good coach. The revenue you generate from your billable coaching hours is a big part of what Pondera does, right? So plus... you said the intensity. So talk about some of that. Like, how intense does it get when you have to A, do all the diligence requests? Because, we had Kelly and Janice and our team requesting the things that happen in diligence, all the documents, all the requests that come in daily, weekly, and the meetings. And then you had to keep running your business, which is being billable. As a consultant, you want to be billable 75, 80% of the time. So talk about that. I mean, what was that like?
So if I can, I'd like to just interrupt really quick, just because I think you did something unique. I don't necessarily know if I recommend this for every business, but Rob's number two guy, his name is Greg. And Rob, this is where I think if you are selling your business, you need to figure out who on your team that you can bring into the tent early. And Rob brought Greg in early. And I felt Greg was the one that was shouldering most of the, don't get me wrong, Rob and Joe were, especially on any big decisions, but in terms of the requests, and Angie, who is Joe's wife, who was doing the books, she was kind of their controller. So I felt like they shouldered a lot of it. I don't know what it was from your side, if you will, Rob. I'd love your thoughts on that. But I will say, I think Rob did a really good job of bringing somebody else into the tent early, so we could just work directly with the team.
I agreed. It was Angie. Angie was a superstar in this process. And then, as Kelly indicated, it was Greg, our practice manager, who intimately knew our business really well. But then the third person that really made a big difference, too, was Callie Sheely, our office coordinator, who really interfaces with our clients. So between Angie and Greg and Callie, Joe and I just relied on the three of them to provide you guys with what you needed. And if there was something that they had a question about, they would let us know. But by and large, it was those three people that made this happen for the due diligence. It was not Rob and Joe. It was the three of them. And they did a great job.
But even in that, Rob, you still had, every legal document, decisions, all the meetings. I mean, you probably got an extra 5-6 meetings minimum a week. That's 5-6 hours gone of billable time. Like, that's still I don't think people understand the intensity of diligence. And we try to make it as least a little intense as possible. But as an acquirer, you have to have that information, or the bank will let you even get the note on it. So talk about that.
Understood. And you've got to have alignment with your legal counsel. No doubt about that. You really have to be able to trust the person. And, we were fortunate that we really trusted our attorney. And our attorney had never represented us before on a deal, but we had done work for him and his team. So we got to know him, and in particular, Joe got to know, our attorney really, really well. And that really helped us a lot, that we had full faith in him. We had just great confidence. We knew that he knew how we wanted to get things done and what our process was. And he did a great job of representing us, that there was a real sense of comfort with him, did a great job.
So let's, before we get to post-closing and learnings and stuff like that, let's dive into this second topic that kind of rolled through this. It's, you have Rob and Joe, I think you said 16 years apart. Is that right? Was that right? 14 years apart. So you got Rob and Joe 14 years apart, different needs. And when we are making an offer for a business, it's like, here's the offer. So for, but Rob and Joe wanted different things. And Kelly, maybe talk about this a bit. You got to think through what they both want and put an offer that, you know, it's not up to us to divvy up how they split the proceeds and the offer. There's the offer, but how much thought did you put into, okay, if it's Rob and Joe and they're staying and rolling equity, how are they going to divide this up? How much thought did you put into that, Kelly? And what role did that playing through what each partner wants and how do you get each partner what they want, although they're different?
Yeah, I would say I don't even think I could emphasize the amount of thought, the amount of pencil sharpening and calculators. And I mean, ultimately, it really came down to Rob and Joe working really well together, in all fairness. But basically, we said, like, look, we knew there was going to be some rolled equity, which is future. We knew there was going to be uncapped bonus, which could be taking kind of bites of the apple as we grow the business each year. And then we knew there was going to be cash at close, right? And then there's also salary, because the idea was they were both going to stay for a period of time, right? So ultimately, what we ended up doing, which was unique, is we said, like, look, here's the whole pot. Here's the whole thing. They asked me very openly, how would I recommend splitting it? And I said, look, this is what I'm hearing. I go, but you guys need to get into a room and have a very good, honest conversation. Because I will openly tell you what I thought was going to happen is not what happened. meaning typically you would have thought the younger person would have wanted to roll more equity and the older person would have wanted more cash at close, but that wasn't mine to decide. They have a different level of risk tolerance. They have different needs of where they're at in their life. So ultimately we basically said, like, look, here's everything. We did everything we could to sweeten the pot and make it real. Pay a little bit now, pay more in the future based upon how we can grow this. But they got to a pretty good place themselves. I would love to have been a fly on the wall for some of those conversations. But we went back and forth. I remember one conversation with Rob, because we ring fenced something very, very unique for Joe. I don't want to get into the details here, but, and I knew I had to find a way to get that specific ring fenced kind of part of the deal done. I also knew, Derek, you weren't going to be super excited about it. So I had to really kind of go back and go, look, this deal's going to die if I can't find a way to do this. It feels fair. It feels right. It also feels, and I'm going to use one of Joe's favorite terms, like a soft pillow for Joe. We need to do this, but it was a lot of effort. I'm not going to lie.
So Rob, take us behind the scenes on how, if you could, I mean, be as open as you can, if you can't, totally understood. But so you and your partner are selling a business and you're presented with this offer that has multiple parts. It's got some in the future. It's got rolled equity. It's got cash at close. How did you guys even approach that? What was the process you used? And did you divide it equally? Did you not? Like, what are some of the things that you guys faced, you know, going through that?
Well, Joe and I were 50-50 partners, and at the end of the day, you know, I believe, you know, we shared equally in the valuation of the business in terms of how the transaction went down, and yet the elements are very different. And as Kelly indicated, we did it differently than most people would have expected, because I, as the old guy, decided that I wanted to be able to clearly stay with the business. I wanted to place more value on the future of the business, because I felt for a long, long time that we've been sitting at a gold mine with the PVA, and we just really had to figure out how to take it out to the world. And I wanted to be a part of that. The other thing for me is that what we do here is my life's work. I mean, I started out as a high school teacher and a coach. And I will do this work till the day I die. I mean, Kelly may get to the point where she says, Rob, you're out of here. But when I'm out of here, I'm still going to keep doing what I do, because it's the essence of who I am. It's what I love to do. And I want to keep doing this work. So, you know, that was my approach. And I saw myself being able to work very effectively with Kelly. I wanted this to work for me going forward. Joe is a guy, as he's fond of saying, he likes to have the bat in his hands. You know, that if we're going to strike out, he wants the bat in his hands. He wanted control. And so he didn't want as much risk into the future, because he was giving up control of the business. And so we had different spots that we came, but we're good enough partners that we were able to talk through that and be able to figure out a way to make it work for both of us. And I was appreciative of Kelly's openness and then ultimately yours as well, because we did do some things that are pretty unique in terms of what we put together in this deal. And I'm grateful that you guys were all creative enough to be able to do that. And I remember I called Kelly and I said, Kelly, if this is going to work, you got to freaking figure out a way to do this for Joe. We got to do this for Joe. And I know it's an unusual request, but we got to figure it out because it's going to be really important to him going forward. And I'm glad we did it. It worked out well. We worked well collectively here. We worked well to be able to make this work for all of us.
Yeah, I think that was probably one of the most unique things is, and maybe it's not unique to deals, but deals with partners, it's difficult to assume the partners want the same thing. Right. And understanding Kelly is, as you know, are the partners getting along or not? That's one good signal. Sometimes they're not. And that becomes even more difficult. You and Joe are obviously leadership coaches, so you can manage that conflict and dealing with people's emotions and intensity. You're really good at that. So let's go to post-closing. Let's talk about, you know, the deal's done post-closing. How did the transition go? Would you have changed anything in the transition? Any lessons you want to share with a listener on, hey, we did this and it worked well. We didn't do this. We should have done this.
So I would say the one thing that I think we did really, really well, and I also think it's one of the craziest things that is ever probably that I've ever done. I would even argue, I'm not even sure there's very few deals that are like this. Is so obviously there's key man risk. Like, let's just call that out here. There's key man risk. Joe and Rob came to me and they said, look, there was somebody that used to be in our business who I had met early on. Her name is Olivia. And we think you've got to find a way. We hadn't closed yet. So let's remind everybody, we had not closed yet. We think you need to convince her to come back. And now, selfishly, that actually alleviated a lot of my key man risk because she's our leader of R&D today. Joe and her had a really great mentee. And they were able to transfer smooth transition. But I will tell you, I remember thinking in my head, and I don't even know if you know this, Rob, I was like, this is freaking crazy. I'm making an offer to somebody based upon a deal that I don't even know is gonna happen. Like I remember writing that offer letter thinking, this is crazy. First of all, I had to woo her and go to lunch with her, but explain to her there was a really great future and this was her home. This is where she needed to be. But still, that was a little bit weird. So I would say we did that really well. I think they were right in the fact that we needed to have her back. And she needed to see that I was a part of the future and what it was like. So that would be the one I would say, Rob.
Yeah, I would agree that that was a key thing, you know, in making this thing work. And I also think that it clearly helped by being able to have what we consider to be our three key people, Callie, Greg, and Angie, involved in the due diligence process, yeah. Because it gave them a sense of, you know, that this wasn't being done to them. They were a part of it. They got a chance to meet Kelly. They got a chance to meet, you know, other people from Sleeping Giant Capital. It gave them a comfort level to know that this thing was going to work, you know, because they were absolutely essential to, you know, to our business going forward. One thing that, if I had it to do over again, that I would have done differently, post-close is that Kelly and I, in particular, but Kelly and I and Joe should have met more frequently. You know, we just did not meet often enough, early on. If I had to do over again, I would say we should have done that differently.
And I think there's two things I would have done differently. And one, I'm not sure I would have known how to. The second one, I should have known better. The first one was we should have hired an external controller sooner. Angie, who was amazing and did amazing work. But the fact is we were moving from cash accounting to accrual accounting. We were having to do loan covenants. Like, we were having to do a whole new kind of bolus of work. And she was ready to transition. Like, she was ready to not. And I think I should have picked up earlier on the signals. It was hard because she wanted to stay. She didn't want to let down Joe and Rob. But at the same time, I should have earlier said, like, look, we need to bring in an external controller. Once we brought in Lindsay, that was great. So that was one. And then the second one, which, to be honest, my aha moment on this was, don't laugh, but when I went to a workshop, there's just an online workshop with Patrick Lencioni a couple weeks ago, and it was just talking through the change management model. And I think we were operating so fast, me and Rob and Joe and just everybody, great, everybody was operating so fast. I don't think we gave the culture change enough. I don't think we were, although the team was a part of it, I done a better job of this. Give, like, it's okay to close chapter on that. This is how it's going forward. And let's talk about what that changed. I don't think we gave that enough space. We just kind of jumped in and started working. The best thing Joe said, which I, to this day, like, I feel like that should be on the wall somewhere, was Joe had said, like, look, we're in startup mode again, because there was, not only was there a culture change in terms of, like, the speed in which we're operating, even how we're operating is different. So everybody's job is, like, changing overnight. And when you're in a small business, everybody does everything. And I'm now saying, no, everybody, let's specialize. Let's be best at what we're good at. And let's try to figure out how we're going to divvy up the work. So there's been a lot of change. I think we could have done a better job early on saying what it was, what it's going to be, and what does that look like in between? And I just think we just got on that treadmill and started running as fast as we could.
Well, but in fairness to, first of all, Kelly, that's your style, number one. But number two, in fairness to you, you know, you needed to go through the first 90 days to figure out what the hell was going on here. You know, yeah. So, I mean, it's easy to second guess and say, well, now, based on what I know, I would have done it differently. But you didn't know that, you know, you literally had to get in the middle of it and figure it out as it unfolded, you know.
It's all good.
Oh, good. Yeah. So a lot of people, team management, change management, keep coming back to that, relationship management. Well, what surprised you the most after closing? Last thing, what surprised you the most post-closing? Rob, any big surprises as a seller that rolled equity and still key part of the business and key part of the team? What surprised you the most post-closing?
I would say two things. Number one, I didn't realize how much fun it was going to be working with Kelly. I like the vibe here. I just really enjoy the direction. I enjoy the culture. It's awesome. It's just awesome. And then the second thing for me related to that is that I got an opportunity in September to participate in a board meeting, you know, with Kelly and the board. And I really enjoyed that thought interaction with the board and look forward to more of those interactions in the future. It was great. That was a nice surprise to be a part of that.
Yeah. Thank you for coming for that. Yeah. Kelly, biggest surprise post-closing on Pondera specifically. I know you closed two deals, but what was your biggest surprise post-closing?
So one was good and one was bad. So I'll do the bad one first, because I always want to end on good, because I am an optimist as well, like Rob. So the bad part of it is, I mean, holy crap, everyone, going from cash accounting to accrual accounting, that is no joke. That is no joke. And how you recognize revenue and, you know, and on when we do big contracts and it's spread throughout, it's just that that took a yeoman's work, right? And I am not a finance expert. I know enough to be dangerous, right? But so that was a big surprise. Even though Rep Light went from accrual, from cash accounting to accrual accounting on the first deal, very different business model, just very, very different. So that was the one thing that was a surprise and wasn't good. The second thing that was a surprise that I think was good, is, and I don't ever look at these as transactions. I look at this as, these are businesses that are an extension of me. And these are people I want to spend my time with. I didn't realize how much I would just really love the team, like so quickly. Like, you know, you actually asked a question, what was one word to describe the experience? I think you wrote that, Derek, in some pre-notes. And originally I wrote a blur. So the experience was a blur. Everything went really fast. But ultimately I landed on the fact that it was like coming home. It was like this amazing group of people that accepted me and loved me, and I want to run as fast as I can. And they understand that it's not only Pondera. They understand there's Rep Light. They know I'm looking on a third deal. They know that there's going to be more change. But I think they've been really gracious in trusting me and trusting Rob. And honestly, I would say the surprise has been is how welcome I have felt so quickly.
Okay. Well, okay. So let's hit rapid fire and then we'll close out. So I gave you some of the rapid fire questions, but not all of them, but one word to describe the experience, Rob.
I would say it's been really comfortable.
Comfortable. Wow. I wasn't expecting that. Kelly, one word to describe the experience.
I'll use the word I said, a blur. It all went very fast, but it didn't. But it did.
One word or short sentence if you were to give advice to future buyers and sellers.
Build time together. Together. Your broker, your attorney, your accountant, they're all important. But they're not the ones that stay with the deal when the deal is done. So invest in the time with the owners. Even if the owner's not staying, if the owner's transitioning, you need to understand what culture they build, how they feel about people, important customers. Like, you have to invest that time.
And I would say, similar to that, I would talk more often than you think is necessary. I mean, just really spend time together.
Okay. Yeah. Some good takeaways. So, okay. Some fun rapid fire questions. Kelly, I think you've already gone through this one, so I don't know if it's fair, but maybe we'll just do Rob. But Kelly, pitch in. Rob, favorite leader?
My favorite leader?
Mm-hmm.
Joe Day.
Joe Day. Oh, yeah. Kelly.
Jesus. He did it well. He got 12 people to start a movement.
Okay. If there was an animal that reflected your leadership style, Rob, what animal would that be and why?
She's in the chair here right next to me, my Labrador Retriever.
Well, why is that your leadership style? Why does she reflect that?
One, because of her versatility. It's one of the things that I pride myself on in terms of my ability to be able to do a lot of different things. And two, it's just the loyalty and the companionship. And that's for me, it's all about relationships. And that dog really brings it to me all the time.
Kelly, you got a word for your leadership style?
Word or animal? Those are two different things.
Animal.
I'm not sure if I said this on the last podcast, so just for the record, I don't, but I would probably say cheetah. I run very fast, and I know that.
I think you might have said that last time, too. I have to go back and check that, because it's been a while. Okay, thank you guys both. This has been great. Thank you. It's very unique that we get a seller and a buyer, especially a seller that is representing himself in a partnership, so thank you for doing that, Rob. Let's end on a couple of things. If people wanted to learn more about Pondera or either of you, where should we point them? What are some things we should point them to?
So for me, I think the easiest way to point them to is my LinkedIn, only because I've actually been chronicling my journey as a searcher since I started this. Mm. And I've kind of talked pretty openly. I mean, obviously I've left names out about deals, and I've talked about Pondera. That's one. And then the obvious one is going to our website or just dropping either Rob or I an email or a LinkedIn message. We respond.
What the website for everybody is?
www.ponderaadvisors.com.
Ponderaadvisors.com. And what else would you want the listeners to take away? Either connecting with you or something valuable, you know, besides the Pondera virtual advisor, which I said, you know, everybody should get an assessment, learn about themselves. We actually talked about our assessment over Thanksgiving dinner. My wife learned that I was very low on relationship score over Thanksgiving dinner, so that made it super unique conversations that night and the next day, and still to today since Thanksgiving. So, you know, take that. But other things that, you know, where they could find you, connect with you, Rob.
Well, first of all, Derek, I've got to ask, has your wife taken the PBA yet?
She hasn't. I should make her take it.
Well, don't make her take it. Offer the opportunity for her to take it.
I should offer the opportunity for it.
I personally would welcome giving her the feedback. And then I would personally welcome sitting down with the two of you together and taking you through the results together of each other's results. I would enjoy doing that.
I will take you up on that offer if it's out there, for sure. I think I personally, Ian, even communicate, I'm bad at communication. I'm bad at relationships. I work hard at it, but it's not my, I like diving into research and reading and analytical stuff. So I work hard at it, but it can be exhausting for me. I will take you up on that for sure.
Derek, I want to make a plug for you and Doug and Sleeping Giant Capital. I love the philosophy of your firm. I love the fact that you guys are interested in identifying businesses in West Michigan because you're interested in being able to keep people and capital, you know, here in the state. I love that. I love the fact that you're interested in buying businesses and holding them. You know, you're not looking at a quick return and flipping things, but you want to be able to build a business over time. And I also enjoy the twist that you have with involving your LBS students with your portfolio companies. And I'm really excited about us being able to interact with your students going forward. You know, I love the interaction with students, but I also know they're going to bring a lot of value, a lot of creativity, a lot of different ways of thinking about our business in the future. So Sleeping Giant Capital's got a lot to offer, you know, companies from that perspective. So thank you, Derek, and to you and Doug for your leadership with Sleeping Giant Capital. It's really been a great experience.
Well, we are so excited about the addition of Pondera. One, because it helps us, you know, identify and coach CEOs better. Not only that, our students are in our program are now all taking, this is the first semester they all took the PBA. So the virtual advisor, you've actually trained one of us to help do the coaching, Craig Hopkins, who helps with our students in kind of an operational role, is giving everybody feedback. I didn't tell you guys. I forgot to tell you guys this. We stopped all the teams for the first time in our process 2 weeks ago, and Craig redistributed them based on their PBAs for a session.
Awesome. That's awesome.
And it was, we had 2.5 hours to do work. So we put them all in different groups. I'm not fully trained on the PBA, so I don't want to destroy it, but he put all similar people that were alike in one group. Some of them moved really fast and high risk. Some of them couldn't move at all. So, and it was amazing to watch. We're going to continue doing that and keep building it into our program. And hopefully other universities, you know, get to know your students better. It just helps retain them and helps give them their class such a better experience of working together. It was an amazing thing. And I got the project charter done for next semester. I'll get that over for you guys. We are excited to work on this project because we believe in the tool. We believe in this growth. We're excited to see what you guys can do and be a small part of helping you guys do that. But yeah, it's totally woven through our leadership program now at the university, in a really good way. And Craig is doing a wonderful job with that. I wish I had more time to totally dive in, and get that coaching that he got. But if he's there to coach us, then we think that's the best way to approach that. So thank you guys for believing in us and this transaction and building our portfolio with Kelly and just the value you guys bring to us is simply amazing. So thank you guys for your time today. Yeah. Thank you for sharing, Rob. I know that you had some concerns about sharing your perspective and not Joe's perspective, just yours. So I want to make sure that's clear again. And Kelly, thanks for joining us and setting this up. We're excited to see the future and be a part of it.
Good. And Derek, specifically, I have a request as it relates to LBS. I know that for this first situation, Alex and Greg came down and interacted with the students. If there's ever an opportunity for me to do that, I would welcome having interaction with your students. I really enjoy those kinds of things, and I'll make it a point to make myself available. So if I can be of help with the program, let me know.
Yeah, let's. Well, next semester, we're doing the project with LBS students, but you know, we're going to start with the PVA at the beginning of the semester and the same kind of leadership session they went through. So maybe there's some more time to get on your calendar, Rob. I know that you also, Kelly also wants you out being billable. So there's that fine balance there of how we do this.
Understood.
And, you know, reason we got Craig trained, but yeah, let's find a way that you can come down here, Rob. It's always great to see you. And I'm going to take you up on the offer with the wife too. That'd be great.
I'm actually taking the action item and sending Stacy a text after this call.
All right. Please do. I wish Stacy loved the rink as much as I do. I don't know if she loves having the rink in the backyard. So now's a good time, probably.
All right. So. Speaking of the rink, please send me a picture of the rink. I want to see that, Derek.
I have a takeaway. I will send you a picture right after we're done here, Rob.
Thank you both. Have a great day. See you. Bye.
Thank you, guys.